Welcome to the pre-conference tournament, except that we already had two conference tournaments, but mostly your conference tournament preview edition of College Crosscast. I'm Ryan McDonald.
Hey, everyone. This is Chris Jastrzemski.
Hey, folks. Good to be back. It's your boy, Ari Barrister.
Safe's back. And we don't have Jake. Woo! Ratings are going downhill from here. If Jake had
everyone already turned off. They're like, all right, I'm out of here. Where's Nazar?
If you're still sticking around, it's time for College Crosscast. Welcome to College Crosscast as we dive into elimination time in college across. It's May, so we're in May Madness, or May Mayhem, however we want to brand it. But
Madness. Although Mayhem. You know, I don't know. Mayhem sounds very good for this season. Madness is kind of taken from March. I'd go with May Mayhem.
I kind of like May Mayhem, but I can
understand how people... It's got May and Mayhem.
Yeah.
Call us NCAA.
Yeah, we got some... We're just...
We got branding. But welcome back, Safe. Glad to have you back up and running with your brand new swanky computer, as you can tell by the awesome audio that we have. It's not like it's sounding like he's calling in on a phone this time, so it's going to be even more.
I always say the one thing I hated the most about the podcast was hearing my own voice, so...
Don't worry, hopefully,
hopefully with the new computer, everything sounds a little better. But no, it's good to be back. Great shows. Shout out Jake. Jake killed it. I loved it. And I definitely loved the ratings joke last week. That was hilarious. I loved the banter, especially the early recruiting stuff. I was joking around with Chris. I was like, I was probably going to come in hot just because I didn't get a chance to talk about Philly getting the Final Four and early recruiting. But I just wanted to, you know, first to say what's up to everyone, see how it sounds. Chris, congratulations to you. Before we get into my hot takes, I know you'll be going up to Foxborough. Marissa and our boy Joe will be joining you as well.
Thank you. Credentialed.
Third year in a row, right?
Third year in a row, second year with College Cross, my first year with this Marissa's old site in Lacrosse Retrust. So right now Foxborough is a definite, just finding where in the world to stay for 5 days and 5 nights. And then, as I'll probably mention before, Thursday tomorrow I'll be at the NEC semifinals because it's an hour away in Geneva. And not sure about Delaware because depending on what the bracket looks like, I might make the drive from Syracuse to Delaware for the second quarterfinal.
Obviously, we want you to not use up the credential because that would mean Syracuse would be in the Final Four if you're not using that credential, right? You're still filming during the tournament?
Yes, but I mean, I could also just pick it up and get like all the, like, the press credential money, food and stuff. So, gotta think on your head.
That was the thing. You know what? You know, I love sports writers. We love them all, right? Shout out to everyone at ESPN who is no longer there. You guys all did great work. Mm-hmm. But they always definitely make it sound like they're coal mining. And last year, being in the link with Chris was hilarious because I was just like, this is amazing. There's so much food. It's all air conditioned. They put on the intercom any important stat of, like, right, Chris? Like, pretty much every play. Anything that happened, then someone gets on a microphone. And that's where you hear all these really intelligent things that you see on Twitter. Like, oh, someone just put that on the mic.
So this is where it all comes from.
Yeah, no. Hofstra's got a great press box, too, except I'm going to be doing a little bit of some in-the-stands type of reporting from Hempstead for the quarterfinals. I'm not going to be in the press box. I enjoyed my time in the press box for the 2014 quarterfinals, but this time I'm bringing it back to the people. I'm going to be in the stands.
In the streets.
In the streets.
Yeah, so there's going to be goodies and content between Twitter and Instagram to come on quarterfinal Saturday at Hofstra.
Hopefully we're there.
Yes, please, for the love of God. We'll get into a little bracketology discussion along the way on our journey through the conference championships. So Safe, I guess you want to drop some takes.
I was like, we should keep it for the end maybe, or just do it now. I'll just do it now. Earlier, it'll be quick. It'll be like 2 minutes. Yeah, quick. Early recruiting. All right, I get it. I thought all you guys had actually pretty good points. Was it Jake and Chris, or just Jake, the one about just being mocked for how the sport looks with the early recruiting of like such young kids. So I get it. I think you should still be sophomore year. I think, like, you know, just the culture out there, like, kids are taking SATs in eighth grade. You know, it's lacrosse coaches aren't the ones making, you know, this is what the culture is right now. Is college the pressure and the parents kind of being like helicopters over their children. So, yeah, I mean, it's like, I get it. You want to change the sport, that's good. Yeah, exactly. I get it makes the sport look well. I still think it wasn't that big of a deal, but I would push it back to sophomore year. I think by sophomore year, you should be, you know, this is still America, right? I thought, if I'm not mistaken.
It's still America.
So I don't think a non-binding agreement to maybe make an agreement later on, we need to wait until someone's a junior. But, other than that, it's fine. Shout out to Fairfield and Philly. I love that the Final Four, shout out to Foxborough. They're going to be great this year, next year, but they're moving it again, and I'm ecstatic that it's come back to Philly, obviously. So, I could be talked into having the Final Four in Philly in 2018. I don't see that much of a problem, but, you know, we'll see how Foxborough does this year. Maybe we have to get Philly to save it. But those are the other two. Well, the big one is, you know, Michigan, which we will just get into in due course. But I missed those conversations on the pod, and I just had to drop those takes.
So, speaking of Michigan, this week, big news dropping that Michigan has let go of head coach John Paul. So, we have an opening. Let's begin the coaching carousel. Who knows, it'll be as wild as last year, but we have an intriguing opening with Michigan.
Well, I think I kind of hinted it at the beginning of the year when we did our Big Ten preview that if Michigan didn't win a Big Ten game, or I think be under 500, obviously they were over 500, but the schedule was kind of like soft, not to say the least, but they didn't win a Big Ten game this year, John Paul would have been out, and John Paul's out. I like the move. I know it's really tough to bring a team up from club to varsity level. We should definitely not just deny the fact that what John Paul did was excellent, bringing the Michigan program up and what he's done for the program, starting to get big-name recruits. Haven't really started to pan out yet, but whoever gets the coaching job will have Brett Noseworthy, will have a guy like Thacker Kerr, and Tommy Height became a big star this year, and that three good players, a defense needs some work, some highly talented recruits as well are going to be coming, but definitely from what I heard with Paul Clucker, Terracara, Anish Shroff have said it, this could be a big change, big coaching change in the NCAA college lacrosse world, and that could definitely shift the college lacrosse landscape if Michigan does this right. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could still do this wrong, and they could get like a low-profile assistant, and we're all like scratching our heads because it's Michigan. It's a Big Ten school and one of the top two conferences, not saying the top yet, in all of college lacrosse. And you have a lot of money, and they're opening up a new facility. So Michigan needs to get this right. They could easily pull a big-name head coach, like kind of like Virginia did, but maybe even bigger. Or go with the assistant route, and maybe the only assistants that I know of is Jerry Byrne from Notre Dame that could get the job if he wants it. Other than that, it's probably a head coach switching to another vacant head coaching spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is going to be an interesting one to do. I think that I understand where we're coming from. I know at the beginning of the season, I was like, you know, John Paul's got to be kind of in the hot seat because of the resources Michigan has, and they haven't really made the jump like schools like Penn State and Rutgers have. Ohio State was ready, kind of already there in the ECAC, but, I figured at the beginning of the season Michigan had to make a jump, but Michigan did pretty good this year. But I get that now you're in a much more competitive Big Ten, where most likely you're going to have five teams in the tournaments, and you're the one sitting home, so I understand where they're coming from. This is going to be the interesting case, though, Michigan generally does a good job of supporting its athletics department as a whole. It's not just putting everything to hardball and football. They also put money into basketball. They put it into hockey. They put it into softball. So Michigan's got a well-rounded athletics department. So you would figure that they would, you know, make that move for lacrosse as well, but that's a big if. I mean, it would make sense for Michigan to make the jump and go after someone and, you know, hey, look, we can really grow the program. I mean, they're going to have a new stadium next year, too. But I know we're all saying, oh, this could be the biggest opening in college lacrosse history. I agree with the potential, but we got to see what direction Michigan goes on this, I think, because it could very well be one of the biggest openings around, because the potential is definitely there to grow Michigan. The blueprint's there for, as I said, Penn State and Rutgers. But at the same time, is it really going to do it? Because we've, you know, been kind of saying, oh, Jacksonville, they're in Florida, they could get all the recruits. They're slowly but surely getting their way there. But at the same time, you know, we were wondering for most of the season, why isn't Jacksonville doing better? Why isn't Jacksonville doing better? You know, you figure with Galway and Powell, they would have been able to land some guys at the end of, you know, last-minute recruiting and all that. Now, granted, Jacksonville did make it into the SoCon tournament. They've got a spot in it. They rallied late in the season. But, you know, Michigan's going to be, is it going to be a case where, yeah, they could actually rise like some of their Big Ten brethren? Or is it going to be like some other schools that we've been expecting for years to be the hot team to come up through the ranks but not really get anywhere?
I think Michigan, I would say, is it surprised a lot of people, right? I mean, I think we all probably maybe thought Paul next year would be that year that, you know, if something could have happened, just because Michigan, decent year, 20th RPI.
Yes.
You know, not that it would be like they'll give him one more year, because this was the first year we had all four years of recruited kids, if I'm not mistaken. So I thought like this was still not that great of a year, even though it was the best year Michigan ever had. I thought like just the way it was going at the beginning with beating Penn, I thought they could maybe getting one Big Ten win was possible, I thought. And if you're Michigan and you're at the bottom, getting one would actually be good. You know, that means you're beating someone that's considerably better than you. I think the surprise, the suddenness of it caught everyone by surprise, even though I'm sure there were whispers. And I think just because it is one of the two power conferences job opening that no one kind of really thought that was opening. And if you look at it, like Brecht, you know, Brecht may leave, but like I think if you're Rutgers, you're in the top 12, 15 jobs, and you know, maybe even higher. You got Myers, who's young, Tambroni.
Tambroni's going to make the move, especially now that Penn State's actually finally at that contender.
No. I'm not talking about moving. I just meant, like, if you're looking at the landscape and you see that there's these power jobs or jobs in the power conferences, you weren't expecting any of them really to come up. You know, Stargardt came up last year and that, you know, getting fired to kind of surprise people. But, like, these jobs don't come up often is where I was getting at. The suddenness of a job like Michigan and the potential that it has to all of a sudden open up, the post I put up, you know, really kickstarted the coaching carousel, because what we saw last year, like whether or not someone leaves or stays is, it's obviously important to the kids and stuff, but you know what I mean? Things change at that school, even if they don't leave. They, you know, they get bumped up, they get leveled up on their benefits and salaries, so their assistants, you know, there's more money being put into the program. You know what I mean? Just, yeah. You know, as Michigan's a big, like, 1,000-foot yacht. Or, you know, it's going to make some waves, even if you get on the boat or not. So I think it's going to help a lot of coaches who are just going to just have their names talked about. And if Chris, you and I have been talking about, it's definitely, you know, gotten a lot of interest from everybody. It's, I don't know if we want to go too far into that stuff, but like I said, I think it'll attract a fair amount of attention, and I wouldn't be surprised if I put out like Marr and stuff like that, but like Andy Shea, I could definitely see him leaving, just because like that's where the trend has been going. Ivy League's a great school, I'm sure you get paid pretty pretty nicely and stuff like that, but like just quick research, you'll see like you get nice job. You're getting paid nice at Michigan. And with all due respect to John Paul, you know, he had the pedigree of coming from a club coach. He didn't have the pedigree of, like, you know, already being a head coach. As soon as Tiffany came to Charlottesville, they gave him a contract that's paid him more than Starger last, you know, than Starger's last year. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, Michigan probably can afford the same amount. You know, it's just going to, you know, just change the sport. I wouldn't go as far as Clark, and I thought, like, me and Jake were, like, far enough to saying it's kind of a big job, bigger than Princeton, and almost as big as UVA. Possibly could be, I don't know if it's the biggest of all time.
I don't think it's the biggest of all time. I mean, down the road,
if Syracuse opened up, I'm sure, you know, like,
Syracuse or Hopkins or, you know, one of the blue bloods. Mm-hmm. Okay, stop with your desktop. You're not a Syracuse.com comment or desktop.com.
Petro, go to Michigan.
Johnny Hess, go to Michigan. Syracuse.com commenters will be dancing in the streets. No, I mean, yeah, Michigan has the potential to become that big job. As of now, it's not sexy. I mean,
it has the chance to be really.
Has the chance, yeah. I mean, as of now, I would definitely put UVA way ahead of Michigan. I would put Princeton slightly ahead of Michigan, but I think, you know, the benefits of not being restricted to Ivy standards is definitely a plus for any coach, you know, comparing anything from Ivy to non-Ivy. So that's a little bit of a different animal.
But, so right now, I'd say Michigan.
But I think if you get a good coach, start making some NCAA tournaments, then Michigan's going to be rising up like a bottle rocket.
I'd say right now, Michigan's like the Rosie Huntington-Whiteley right now, and it has the potential of going Megan Fox if we're talking actresses here, because Safe loves the actress.
what analogy is that?
It's a good one. It's a good one. I mean,
there's literally one rule. We have one rule, Chris. It's no snitching.
I'm not snitching. It's the truth. But hey, listen.
It's like Tottenham at the end of the 2000s when they were near relegation zone to Tottenham now.
No, Arsenal, listen, second place. Listen to my logic here. When Rosie took over for Megan Fox, she had the potential of being a great actress and a great looking actress. And then all of a sudden she didn't come to pan, and that's how it could be the Rosie. But the Megan Fox, that's like everyone wants to be her, you know? Everyone wants to be with her and whatever. That could be the Megan. If Michigan nails his job right, this could be the Megan Fox. And by the way, one candidate is out of the drawing. It's Richmond's Dan Chamadi. He just signed a 5-year extension today.
Just so. Today?
Just today.
People are leveling up all over the place.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Leverage,
this is the start of the dominance.
Preemptively giving their coaches more money and power and whatever they want.
I think Chamadi definitely deserved it with the fact that how he built that Richmond program up really quickly in 4 years. He made the tournament his first year. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget that. I mean, and he was pretty darn close.
Because you bring up Richmond, this could brings up a good point though. At the beginning of the season, I was saying, you know, Michigan, it makes sense for them to, you know, with the resources that they have and their athletic department support for everything, they should have been a contender much quicker. But you're looking, I know that we're talking the Big Ten here, but Michigan was in the ECAC back then. So they had a little bit of an easy road. I say little bit because you still had to contend with Denver. You still had to contend with Ohio State. And then Loyola for a year. Or was Loyola in the ECAC earlier than that?
They were.
Am I getting confused because Denver went from one conference to the... Yeah, they went from Great Western to ECAC. Yep. But anyway...
My God, that conference is weird. But go on.
But yeah, but you look at Rich... I know it's a little bit... It's easier for a Richmond, but look at how quickly Richmond's become a perennial top 20 team. Look at how Monmouth is now the favorite to win their conference in the NEC. There's a lot of these young programs that have built up faster than Michigan when you figured Michigan would be the one that... Yeah, and BU too. BU is now a Patriot League contender, a legit top 20 team as well. Where it's a little bit baffling that Michigan, given that everything Michigan touches turns to gold, they've probably got one of the best athletic programs in the nation. Their football team's now a top 10 team under Harbaugh. Their basketball team's always a threat to make the Final Four. Their softball team... it's unheard of to have a northern softball team be a national power, but Michigan's done that. Their hockey team has won Frozen Fours. So it's a little bit odd that, you know, lacrosse just hasn't had that same effect. And you would figure, even before the Big Ten conference was an idea for lacrosse, you had to think, okay, yeah, I could play for Michigan compared to a Richmond or a BU or a Monmouth. You would figure Michigan would have built up quickly. And this is before it got really tough for them playing in the Big Ten.
I think you got to let's all do props and respect to John Paul, like transforming the program, and in the 6 years he had all the props in. But I think, you know, when you look at like Nick Myers, you know, he's in his eighth season now at Ohio State, so he had some time to build Ohio State to what it was. I mean, from all I can remember, Ohio State's really only one Elite Eight run in 2015, and right, wasn't there one in 2011?
2006 or 2007, they made it to the Elite Eight, I think, right?
Yeah, 2015 they did too.
2000, yeah, but that's, that's before.
Yeah, in the mid-2000s, they were pretty decent, Ohio State. So yeah. Ohio State had a base.
Exactly.
And then Myers took them to a new level and made them a
premier. And he was a good, and he had 8 years to do it, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. That's, and same thing with Tambroni, you know, he pretty much had Petro type pedigree
that's another case of coming from Cornell. Way too long to build up than we thought it would be with Tambroni. Mm-hmm. Penn State. We thought Penn State was a Final Four contender the second Tambroni came to Happy Valley, and there's just now finally being a safe tournament.
But then
you add in the fact, like, I remember when Maryland went to the Big Ten. First post I ever wrote on this site, I was like, it's going to be good because the conference is actually probably going to get pretty good pretty quickly. Michigan's having to be the youngest program with the coach who, again, with all due respect, I love John Paul, did an amazing job transforming school. Like, you know, he wasn't a Division I coach somewhere else, or, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. and then lead the team. So... You have that. If Michigan was in the SoCon, is what I'm saying, and they're still Michigan, you know what I mean? They're not a SoCon school. They told everybody else in the Big Ten, we're taking a couple years off. We'll join you guys later. You know what I mean? They probably would be doing what, Marquette's, you know, Big East is pretty good. You know, but you know, they would be pretty good. They would be BU. They would be Richmond. You know, a team that's like things on the rise because they're playing of a competition that's like not the Big Ten. They didn't have five opponents that were in the top 12 RPI.
But Michigan had that in this. But this is the issue. Marquette and Richmond were starting off around the same time as Michigan before there even was a Big Ten. I mean, again, I don't want to.
But now that there is a Big Ten.
Yeah, but I'm saying I don't want to, you know, be hard on John Paul or anything because, again, it's a very tough job to start a program and everything.
Absolutely.
Get a club to D1. Level, but I just think because they started around the same time as Marquette and Richmond, and Marquette and Richmond are top 20 teams every year. Michigan wasn't even able to accomplish that before the Big Ten made their lives 10 times harder.
Here's the difference, though. I think he's a club coach. He's not a Brian Fisher or Monmouth who came from Notre Dame to go to Monmouth and look where he's doing with the program. He's not a Ryan Poley who had some D1 background. He's not Tambroni who was a coach at Cornell. He's not Chamati. He doesn't. His only college coaching experience that I know of, really, has been Michigan for about 14 years for club. And then he brought them on for varsity for 6 years, first 6 years of their program. Hasn't done that much. I mean, granted, you could say it was a good year this year because they went 500. But you look at the teams they played, Furman, Penn, which was probably their best win ever in program history, and the others, these Mercer schools, all these other schools, Cleveland State even, that's not, name one really good win. I mean, Penn might be their best win, but, you know, you haven't seen that much improvement. They've gotten the recruits, but it's just the product on the field, and it might be because of the lack of NCAA. I don't want to pinpoint saying that he's a college he's a club coach, and that might be why he gets ticked off a little bit maybe sometimes, or a pet peeve of his that he's labeled as a club coach, but could it be the experience? I don't know. We'll see whoever Michigan's head coach is, and see if there's any valid improvement in the next year or two with them. I think it's the coaching experience right there, and I think it was a move that needed to happen. They also did that with the women's head coach, too, who had the same thing, brought up a program 4 years ago, hasn't turned out to be the results that Michigan wants, and I guess they want to usher in their new building with a new staff.
So I guess before we get it, dive into the conference tournament things, where do we see Michigan going? I mean, we're going to say until we're blue in the face every year between Mar and Nadalin, but who knows, maybe with last year's coaching carousel, once again, they're going to put leverage on that to get a nice raise. So who knows with those two situations. So, I mean, I know everyone's throwing Dom Starge's name around, but I personally think Dom Starge is enjoying retirement. I think his guest com on Inside Lacrosse the other day shows that he's kind of enjoying his retirement. So I don't think he's coming back to coach.
I think if he does decide to coach, it's not at a big-time program. He might do it for, like, a lower-tier program or maybe, like, a Delaware if he wants to. But I think his competitive coaching days, I think, in my mind, are done. And if he wants to do it, he might do it competitively a little bit, but maybe not, like, at an ACC or a Big Ten school, maybe, like, a lower middle of the tier school, like, in the middle of the tier conference, like, the CAA. I think Michigan goes to the top first, and they try to go with the best of the best. Maybe not Desco. Maybe Petromala. Because I've heard a lot. I was talking with Paul Carcaterra of ESPNU. He said he would go after his top three are the following: Petro, Petro, and Petro.
Tell so that to Safe one more time so he can't sleep at night.
So imagine that happens. That would set off a huge chain reaction.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I want to say one quick thing about Michigan's schedule because I was trying to find the Lex Power stuff. In 2014, you know, they were 5-11. Richmond was 6-11, and Marquette was 6-10 that year. But Michigan, at that year, even though it was the first year before the Big Ten started, they played the entire Big Ten schedule because they had Ohio State as their conference opponent in the ECAC. You know, and they had Penn State, who wasn't a Colonial, and then Hopkins in Maryland. So they were already playing Big Ten schedule. Like Richmond and Marquette blew up like around 2015 and stuff like that, but again, I guess I think like Michigan playing in a much different conference stunted whatever growth we were expecting them to have, the same as Richmond and Marquette. But anyway, I think you got to go for Andy Shea or Scott Marr if you're in Michigan after you give your phone calls to Petro, Corrigan, and Sarja. Like, I think you go those three, see who's interested. Someone's interested, then we make it happen. If not, then you just go for the ones who are not in the power conferences. And because I don't think Tiffany's going to leave. He just got there. Danowski's not going to leave, too, because I think, you know, he's open. Maybe his son gets it. Desko's never going to leave. He's the king. You know, he's Tony Soprano. He's not going anywhere from Syracuse.
He's more like the prince. Boeheim gets the kingly stuff, and Desko's like, all right, I'll get whatever else kingly.
Was it
stuff.
Five? How many Desko's got? Five rings?
Right. Five rings.
Yes, I know Desko has more rings than Boeheim, but Syracuse has that warped basketball.
This is a joke. But the main point, like, he's not Prince or Soprano, whatever. He's not leaving. Corrigan's the one. He may.
Like, I don't think he does.
No.
My main point is like, I don't. The man, I love Notre Dame. They're fun to watch, and I think Corrigan's a cool dude. But from what I've read, like, he has entertained calls in the past. So if he did it last year, why not?
But he had a kind of connection with Virginia. That's
he had a connection with Virginia.
See, he doesn't have one with Michigan, although no one really does have one with Michigan. I think if you're talking with a Notre Dame guy, it's Jerry Byrne, the defensive coordinator from Notre Dame. That's the name that I've been hearing. If there's one assistant that goes, it's going to be Byrne because he might be the one ready to go and take that job. And there's going to be probably some top assistants wanting that job as well. But I think Byrne would be the top guy.
He's the only assistant that's even in a top 10, if I was to make a top 10.
Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe Matt Brown, but I think Byrne just has more pedigree. Wasn't Byrne a head coach prior to come to Notre Dame? If I think of listening to the In Your Face Lax Cast, correct? They said earlier today, so they were on it. Shout out to them. Shout out to Source God.
Source God, Dane.
Source God.
That was great. I just got a DM, and then he's like, check this tweet out. I was like, oh my God. So, but no, you'll get interest. And I think, like, if they were them, they go for someone like Shea, because going from the Ivy to a power conference school, it's worked out for the five schools before them. I guess Denver's not a power conference, but you know, Big East is still pretty big, and Denver did well.
It was bigger when it was Syracuse and Notre Dame.
Exactly. So, you know, I think like if I was Yale, I'd worry about Shea. Just because maybe he doesn't want to leave, obviously. But like, if someone comes to you and gives you an offer, and it's a really great offer, and your school can't or won't do it, match, like, you're probably going to leave. You know what I mean? If what we've seen in college sports is any indication, you know, I love how people like bash on the kids for leaving, but like a coach can bounce, you know, with a text message. And it's not even a problem. You know what I mean? It's like, he's got to do what's good for his family. You know what I mean? Like, that nonsense. You know what I mean? So, like, if what we see in college football, college basketball, happens every day, I wouldn't be surprised if it happened here. And, you know, if Michigan can pull an offer together and that's impressive, like, I wouldn't be surprised someone that people thought wouldn't ever leave would, you know, bounced and left.
Shout out Nick Saban signing a contract, by the way.
What if, let's draw up this weird and crazy, probably not going to happen scenario. What if Nick Myers leaves for Michigan?
No, you're never going to have an Ohio State guy leave for Michigan.
That's what I was saying. I was like, Myers, Brecht is the one who could maybe, but like, Myers, and Sombroni would never leave.
Scenario, it's got to be against Nick Myers, because that would fuel the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry and lacrosse rivalry a lot more. And that draws storylines.
They're about to put a statue for Myers if he gets to the Final Four this year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ohio State would then open up their pocketbooks the second they hear about that. So
those are the top three brands, you know. Like, and you know, if you get one of those jobs, you're not really looking to leave for another job. Like I said, Petro is the one coach I could see. I wouldn't blame him. As I say to Adam all the time, I wouldn't blame him at all. I mean, love Petro. I don't want him to leave, obviously. But, like, if he did, like, you know, he's done more than enough, and just get away from these insane alums. So.
I'll wrap it up by just saying, I think, yeah, if they're going to go in any direction, it'll be the Ivy or one of the non-power conferences. I don't think they're going to go within the conference to get a guy. I think the other five Big Ten schools are smart enough to open the piggy bank. Though, Rutgers might, with Breck, I don't know how much Rutgers has really in the reserves, because Rutgers' athletics financial issues have been well publicized, so that might be the one that could. But otherwise, Hopkins is going to open up the bank. Obviously, Ohio State's never going to allow one of their guys to go to Michigan, the school up north. So I think if it's going to be anywhere, you're going to have to look towards the Ivy, the American East, etc., or the Colonial. Maybe the SoCon, but you know what I mean.
Oh, Nadelin?
I don't know.
I got to talk about the captain.
Captain
should be considered.
He should, yeah, definitely. I mean, we heard his name a lot last year. So, I don't know. It depends if Towson opened up the wallet last year and they're willing to do so again this year. That's going to be an interesting case, because last year the two names we kept on pushing around for every job, well, not for Virginia for Nadelin, because Virginia was more offense-oriented, but every other job we were like, yeah, Nadelin. And then if it wasn't Nadelin, we were like, yeah, Mike Daly. Well, Mike Daly's got the new gig at Brown, so he's not really going anywhere anytime soon.
Yep.
But Nadelin, I don't know. It makes sense, but if he didn't leave last year, is Towson going to give him another bump this year? That's going to be interesting.
I think you throw a parade if you get Petro, Corrigan, or Sargent. But I think it's definitely a home run if you get Toomey or Shea. And I think, you know, if you end up, and I put that in quotes just because they're, you know, both excellent coaches, Mara and Nadelin, that it's, you know, it's a major coup. But I forgot to talk about a little bit of Toomey, but like, just because his name's about bandied about a lot.
I don't think Toomey goes.
Yeah, because
lacrosse is pretty much Loyola's football. That's your top sport there.
Yeah, and Loyola's going to open up the wallet for them, too. Loyola's now among the Blue Bloods after their title win in 2012. They're in a very exclusive club. It's not like there's that many programs that they could say they won a national title, so...
Unless he takes Pat Spencer with him, then I don't see him going to Michigan.
So, and he's an alum. So, like, put those. But, like, I think, like, if you end up with Nadelin or Marr, I think that's a major coup. And it could be, like, what Ohio State did when they got Nick Myers. You know what I mean? Like, a really young guy, strong defensive mind, and someone that you really are really confident building up. But, like, you know, I think they'll aim really big, but, you know, they end up with Nadelin or Marr is great. And if they could snag Shea or Toomey, that's, you know, to a parade.
Marr might be tough, I think, in my mind, because he's got the Native American, the Iroquois, the Onondaga, Six Nation, whatever, backyard right behind him. And the fact that UAlbany's a cheap, close school near those Indian Native American reservations is going to be pretty good. And by the way, those kids can play some lacrosse. I'm not sure if, you know, Michigan, if he goes to Michigan and he tries to do that, their school would allow them to take those kids. I'm not sure how friendly they are with Native Americans, to be quite honest with you, but, you know, I think he's got that connection there.
Yeah, because the Sunnis, of course, with the in-state tuition is a lot lower. Plus, I know we haven't really been talking about the political angle, but Cuomo's plan might be a big boon for Albany, Binghamton, and Stony Brook down the line. So,
yeah,
with the new tuition plan, so the Sunnis might not actually be a might actually be a pretty nice gig to have in the years to come. So,
a lot of factors to go in this decision.
Mm-hmm. And we'd be remiss without doing the obligatory. What about Gary Gate going back to the men's game?
Yeah, only if it's Syracuse.
So let's move on. Last week's action where everyone lost. We'll start off with the regular season's games.
That's good.
We'll just run them off and just make one word reactions like kablah! Or what? Or, oh. Canisius 10, Quinnipiac 6.
RIP Quinnipiac winning the MAC. By Seif Fakadu in January.
Well, Fairfield 11, Delaware 7. So that is the end, unfortunately, for Bob Schillinglaw's tenure at Delaware.
Low key monster job, but shout out Coach.
Now he gets to enjoy his time on the beach with some nice cold drinks and enjoy retirement. Yep. Enjoy your retirement, Coach. And thanks for all you've done to the sport of lacrosse. And
he's deserved it.
Yep, made a Final Four with the Hens just 10 years ago. So good job all around, even though the Hens end the season on a loss. A lot to be proud of with the legacy he's left behind for the Hens.
Just a bad going off of Delaware. Now, like, I don't want to rain on a Schillinglaw's parade, but just a bad ending to their season. They had a really good start to their season. They were...
Before Rutgers and Rutgers. Oh yeah,
they were 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 3 before CAA play, and they lost the last five, and they finished at 7 and 8. They had a lot. I think they were in the top 20, if I'm not mistaken, for maybe a game. We're getting receiving votes too.
After that Rutgers,
and then after that, the CAA they just imploded. You know, they have whoever goes to Delaware has a great attack in midfield, and Romanoli, Kitchen, Eisel. Also, all three of them are young. Royal Hirschman's a senior. He's going to be gone, but he's got a great building foundation at attack. Midfield is going to get depleted, and their goalie's a freshman in Matt DeLuca. So they have some good guys to lean on next year.
Monmouth beat Manhattan 7-3. The Hawks clinched the top seed in the NEC with that one. So first time ever for the program with a regular season conference title. Binghamton beats Stony Brook in a SUNY derby 6-5 in overtime.
And I honestly forgot that we were doing that.
UMass beat Drexel 14-8 and Sacred Heart beat Wagner 13-11. Saturday's games were a bit of a mess. Albany 16, Hartford 10. That wasn't a mess. Jacksonville 17, Bellarmine 11. Jacksonville boots Bellarmine from the SoCon tournament there and gets the final spot in that tournament.
Bring him in. Three winning three of the last four games.
Cleveland State first ever D1 victory against Detroit Mercy 13-6.
Told you. Listen. Let's go back to the Dylan Sheridan pod when you can after you finish listening to this pod. I say in this one, Cleveland State has a great chance to win a Division One against a Division One team this year. And they did last game by 7 to Detroit Mercy. Don't call me Nostradamus, but I'm just saying.
So, yeah, and it fits with the pattern, like, you know, the Indians beating the Tigers lately, or the Cavs beating the Pistons. We're not going to get into the Browns, but Cleveland rocks. And then in Ivy League play, because Ivy League play went completely haywire, one of those games was Cornell 18, Princeton 17. The Big Red on senior day pull off the upset of their biggest rivals, Princeton, kind of like last year where Princeton pulled off the upset of Cornell. Princeton was locked into the 2 seed anyway, but Cornell ends any hopes for an at-large for the Tigers. Brown 20, Dartmouth 5. Bears are back to Wee Brown Bears scoring machine. In that one, Georgetown 14, St. John's 4. St. John's ends the season without a Big East win, but Georgetown gets their Big East win finally. Harvard 9, Yale 8. As we said about Ivy Carnage, the Yale Bulldogs top seed in the Ivy League. They lose to their biggest rival, Harvard, on the road in Cambridge. So Yale's at-large hopes die as well. Air Force 16, High Point 11. That one gives Air Force the SoCon regular season victory. That was also aided by Richmond's win of Furman, which we'll get to. Marist 6, Siena 5. The Red Foxes win that one.
Marist scored their last 3 goals in the span of 48 seconds to win that game. Siena was up by 2. They were going to go to the MAC, not Detroit Mercy. And then all of a sudden, Marist coming with that 3 straight goals to crush Siena. Just a bad way to lose.
Denver doubles up on Marquette 16-8 in an apocalyptic game in Milwaukee. Denver ends Big East play undefeated. In the game, it was a beatdown. Maryland 12, Johns Hopkins 5. Under a crowd of 11,000, the Terps get the big victory. Matt Rambo.
14,000.
Matt Rambo is now your all-time Maryland Terrapin points leader, surpassing the GOAT, Bob Boniello. I say the GOAT because he's the Division Avenue High School.
Matt Rambo went to LaSalle College High School, so there
so
is
I'm
the
salty,
GOAT right there.
Yeah, I'm salty at Chris because of our high school alma mater's best players being the top two at Maryland. St. Joe's 15, Mount St. Mary's 11. UMass Lowell end their season with a 12-5 victory over NJIT. Blast out the John Cena horns. Villanova 15, Providence 7. Villanova locks up the 2 seed in Big East. In the Big East, that boots Providence down to the 4 line as well. Not a great end of the regular season for the Friars. Richmond beat Furman 13-4. I believe they'll be rematching this week. Let me just see. Yep, Richmond gets a 3 seed, Furman the 4. Or no, yeah, they'll be rematching. Richmond's a 2, Furman's a 3. I'm reading my own bracket rule. Hobart clinches the NEC regular season crown in an exciting one over Robert Morris, 18-16. Hope we get a game like that in Geneva this weekend, because that'll be a good one. Rutgers gets themselves pretty much into the NCAA tournament, assuming all doesn't go haywire. 12-11 victory over the Buckeyes in overtime.
And here
you
will always love with me in overtime, even if Rutgers
might
panic more.
Going acapella.
I love how you went with the bang before the drum.
That's what makes it perfect for lacrosse.
I had to do it because Rutgers gave me some distaste for some reason over my Whitney because they prefer the Titanic, and that's obviously
that might
be why they haven't made the big.
Let's give it a second. I think they just made a mistake. They just saw it and then for, you know that That's his shout out jersey. So we'll let him slide. There we all make mistakes. They deleted it, that tweet. So
they
that's why we trust you, Rutgers.
Then they retweeted Aburn's Titanic and nothing about me, and I just went off on them. But you know what? If they lose in overtime, I will make it in.
If Rutgers misses the NCAA tournament for God knows what reason, we know why.
That's the little B curse right there.
Towson clinches this Colonial regular season crown 10-8 over Hofstra. Because Drexel lost the night before, and Towson with the head-to-head win over Hofstra. So Hofstra's at-large bids all but dead as well. UMBC 10, Vermont 7. Penn in the ACC blatant RPI booster for the first time ever goes against the ACC. Granted, it wasn't going to give Virginia any RPI boost anyway, and it was a non... It didn't really matter because Virginia was nowhere near the NCAA tournament discussion, but Penn 17, Virginia 11, not great, Bob, for UVA. And Mercer beat VMI 11-8, and the final regular season game, not counting the Patriot League ACC Challenge weekend, Penn State 17, Michigan 13. The Nittany Lions with a little bit of a scare there, but they hold on to beat the Wolverines in what ended up being John Paul's last game.
R.I.P. John Paul.
We now head our way into conference tournament time, where we got to blast out the theme song. We're bringing it back. I'm sorry. We'll start off when you ACC, God's Conference, where, okay, UNC, they needed two wins to be NCAA eligible. On Friday in the semifinal, they hung on to beat Syracuse 16-15, a hard-charging orange comeback falls a little bit short, which means, actually, the Syracuse.com commenters were actually kind of tame and said, hey, actually, that was a good comeback effort, we're fine with that, in a really weird reverse face. Meanwhile, Notre Dame beat Duke 7-6. So Notre Dame stopping the hottest team in the nation there on their home field. And then in the title game, just like last May in the quarterfinals of the NCAAs, UNC steps up against Notre Dame and wins 14-10. So UNC wins the ACC tournament. They don't win an auto bid, but that makes them NCAA tournament eligible. And if you could believe it, an 8-7 team that were having murmurs about maybe they could host a game.
Yeah, first of all, let me go to Syracuse for a second. Let me go to Syracuse, because they should have lost that game by, like, 10. I'm not going to lie, because they played, like, crap that second quarter. First quarter, all right, that looked like
Syracuse
their second quarter.
Syracuse second quarters!
That first quarter looked like their second quarter. And then all of a sudden, they just went to, like, the ninth circle of hell with, like, giving up 9 goals in that quarter and 3 pull goals. Like, when does that ever happen to you in a team? Luckily, they came back up to, like, the 8th circle, like, heaven, where they, like, put it to, like, game by 1. And then, you know, typical 4th quarter where the game's pretty much even. They had a chance to win it. Just, I don't think some of the players knew how much time was left on the clock from what it seemed from up top. But, yeah, somehow, some way, Syracuse just loses by a goal, because that's what happens in 2017 with Syracuse lacrosse. Notre Dame was watching. Shout out to the Notre Dame coaching staff for being cool dudes. Coach Corrigan and I were having a discussion about Newhouse. Coach Byrne and I were discussing the Whitneys, and he was a big fan of them. So,
boys with him now?
Yeah, so take that, Rutgers.
So, in other words, if then, Chris is somehow in Ann Arbor next year, you know why.
Yep, and then with North Carolina, I don't think they deserve to be a host. And if they do, I hope they lose, and they probably will lose because they haven't won a game at home this year. But I think taking that, they had a really great performance, no doubt. They're probably one of the hotter teams right now in the nation because of that. And I still don't think they should host maybe the one of like the first 2 or 3 non-seeded bids in the tournament. But definitely with seven losses, you have to look at the records there. I don't think they deserve to be a host in the NCAA tournament. But they might, because, you know, it's North Carolina. It's a big name. It's a blue blood. So, hey, let's just give them a seed. Eight seed. Smile.
I will say this. I think that ACC tournaments, low-key, one of the most impactful things that happened this year. I get it. There was the four teams through 2013, right, Ryan? Or 2014 was the first and only year you guys had six members, correct?
So yep.
It's a tradition, like, unlike any other, a four-team conference play each other again.
At the end of the
year. So wonderful. But this was the one year they should not have been allowed to have the ACC tournament
that
without
is a
16. Hold on. This is because of back in the day when there wasn't that many, you know, competitive at-large teams and stuff like that. Like, you could say, like, you know, maybe there wasn't that many people like scrounging for a seat. Literally because of the ACC tournament. If they didn't have the ACC tournament, whatever, you know, their individual numbers aside, you know, Duke, Notre Dame, and Syracuse, North Carolina wouldn't even be eligible. So that's right there, an open seat for somebody. And I remember when we were discussing before, you made a great point, Ryan. You said the ACC tournament not having AQ is going to cost somebody. And I kind of disagreed. And I was an incomplete disagreement. I should have probably been like, but they shouldn't be allowed to even have this ACC tournament. Because that's the whole benefit. And we all agree that, right? Like, because we all kind of know it's a kind of a racket. Like, we love Notre Dame, but they did it perfect this year. A low number of games. They really pretty much just needed to go 500. And they're in no matter what. And they probably would have had, even with a couple more losses, they probably would have probably still had like a hosting. Just, you know, just because of how few games they had. And every game was a big time game because it made their type of schedule important. So, like, we see it now, if they probably shouldn't have had the ACC tournament this year. I think, like, they got past the grace period. The grace period was important because you were playing for something. But now it's really is much, you know, as blatant as it was before, RPI boost. But now it actually means a lot more. Before it just meant, like, how much further was the ACC than everybody else, you know, when there wasn't that many at-larges. Now it's just like, yeah, you know, there's no even AQ on the line. You know, you're out of the grace period. Like, get a 16. Bring somebody up. Make it official and then, like, do whatever you guys got to do over there. You know, but I think, like, having an ACC tournament without the 16, it really does affect, playoff chances for a lot of teams. You know what I mean? Because now there would be, like, three or four teams battling for that last spot that now North Carolina owns.
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk bracketology in a little bit. I think we benefited a little bit that the bubble was just absolutely dreadful this year. But I mean, I was worried about this because I know you were saying, oh, yeah, well, the team that it's going to screw over is going to be the ACC. Well, Virginia wasn't going to be in the NCAA tournament conversation at all. But, I mean, as weak as that last spot is, that it's like, okay, we'll give it to Villanova, but it's not, it's like Villanova, okay, they have the one win against Maryland, but otherwise they were awful the beginning of the season, and the resume's still a little bit all over the place. But, yeah, I knew that it would be like, okay, yeah, so now we're going to hoard all the thing that I had the issue isn't necessarily with the ACC tournament, but the issue is by taking away the ACC's auto bid, they took away an at-large. They should have kept the at-large.
They should have.
I have no idea why they... Yeah, they shouldn't have taken away a bid. If we're talking about growing the game and everything, keep it at 18. The number of teams grew just because we're taking away the ACC's auto bid doesn't mean, okay, let's take away a bid from the general thing, because you're just taking away from everybody else. I didn't agree with the move to 17 when it started. And I definitely don't agree with it now. Now, again, yes, we had the weakest bubble in years where we're talking about, okay, the first team out is Villanova or one of the Ivies or Hofstra. But in reality, they didn't really deserve to be there, really, if they had the 18th spot anyway. And it'll be like, all right, mm-hmm. Wasn't really a great bubble. But it's still taken away from the Colonial. It's still taken away from the Big East. It's still taken away from those conferences. And what we're having now is, if all things hold serve, which means Albany and Denver take care of business, every at-large is the ACC and Big Ten. What good is growing the game if every single at-large is between
two conferences.
Yeah, between two Power Five conferences.
Makes no sense. And I know, but we were going back
with,
to the ACC
without the ACC tournament, you wouldn't have had North Carolina.
But going back to the ACC tournament, I remember last year, being a part of a ACC team, coaches were talking about, like, some of our coaches were talking about, why don't we just scrap the entire ACC tournament? Because the first thing is, it's brutal. It's a gauntlet for all these four teams that make it. Pretty much four teams every year. But ever since Notre Dame and Syracuse joined in 2014, it's always been the 3 and 4 seed playing the ACC championship game. And the ACC champion usually doesn't go to the final. ACC champion never goes to the final four for the most part. 2014, Duke lost in the semifinals, but they won in the NCAA championship. 2015, Notre Dame lost in the semifinal. They went to the final four. 2016, you had North Carolina being bounced in the semifinals. They won the NCAA championship. And then 2017, you know, the top two seeds in Syracuse and Duke lose. But then you have North Carolina winning it. How far are they going to go? They're probably going to be bounced before the Final Four, too. It's brutal for the semifinal winners, because you have to play two games in 3 days against top 10 schools, and for the most part, even top 5 RPI or top 10 RPI. That's not what you want to have your players participate in. I mean, granted, it'll be a good test for the Final Four in about a few weeks if you make it that far, but it's just, you want to have your players as much as rested as possible in time to make that May run, in time to have that 2 games in 3 days run, so they have to do it again. You only have to do it once, not twice. So that's one reason. And as Brian said before, 18-team, I don't know why they took out that one bid. I think it might be because to even it out, if you have 9 auto bids, you should have 9 AQ or 9 at-large teams. I'm not totally sure, but then you're not growing the game, especially this year. It's a bad example. I wonder if, you know, the NCAA, since it's going to be a rules year in 2017, if they're going to grant back that 18th seed so that there is that one extra team that gets in as well, or they grant the auto bid back to Syracuse or the ACC and give a temporary change and make it just 5 teams. If that 5 teams or any other conference can have an auto bid,
or they could just increase the tournament. I know, again, we're talking about a year with a really weak bubble, but if
just
go to 20, yeah, go to 18 or go to 20.
Top 4 seeds play a week, yeah, top four teams. But then here's the thing: you get to pretty much kind of maybe if it's not really the top 20, but top 15 teams are going to make it automatically for the most part. I'm not sure, but I like 18. 18 sounded fine. Have the 1 and 2 seeds play against at-law, the playing game winners, or just change the way the playing games are, because I think it's not really a fair advantage for those teams to play on 4 days rest, and some of these teams are off for a week or even 2 weeks. So there's got to be a little bit of leeway in there, too.
Like, I mean, just, I guess, in defense of the bubble. Well, Towson or Rutgers are not going to make this, or both, you know what I mean? If Drexel comes out of nowhere and steals it for Philly, like, that would be rough. You know, Nova, it's just been an interesting team just because they've been just on an 8-1 run since starting the year 1-4. But BU beats Duke at the end of on Saturday, or was it Saturday or Sunday? I forget which day it is. Like, you know, they would have a win over Duke, Loyola, and
hey, we're not getting ahead of ourselves here. We got to talk Patriots.
Yeah, for sure. But you know what I mean? Like, I think it's a decently, you know, I think there's probably 3 or 4 teams that have a claim for a spot. And like I said, like, it may be a hot take, but I think the ACC tournament is going to be the one that has the most impact on the year, just because literally North Carolina, if they just didn't hold the door to it, North Carolina wouldn't be in. And, you know, some of the RPI numbers would be, you know, maybe, you know, Syracuse and Maryland for number one, or who gets number one, you know, maybe wouldn't be as close as it would be now that they had the ACC tournament. So that's my take.
We'll move on to the Patriot League because they had an interesting tournament as well. Unlike the ACC, they held serve, though. On Friday, obviously, I think we did the podcast before where BU beat Lehigh, and Holy Cross pulled off the upset against Navy.
Mm-hmm.
On Friday, Loyola beat down Holy Cross 13-3. Good God. And then Army beat BU 10-7, and a little bit more scoring in that one. That set up the top two seeds, and then the championship game at Ridley was kind of a bore fest too. Loyola drops Army 13-4. So a pair of blowout wins for the Greyhounds gives them the first auto bid to the NCAA tournament.
That sucked. I mean, Army hasn't had Loyola's number in about four or five matchups, last four or five matchups. Loyola's starting to get hot again. They've won their last five of their last six. Pat Spencer is still a G with, what did he have? He had, I mean, a goal and three assists, but still, he's still a G. Sherlock stepping up, three goals, one assist. I don't think I don't think Loyola's going to be that strong. I don't expect him to get a seed in the NCAA tournament, but, you know, it's, as we said, a weak bubble and a weak Patriot League for them. Army could have won it, but they started to falter late, and we kind of started to see that midway through the season with their tight wins over Bucknell and Colgate and even Lehigh by two. And then BU had a shot, but they had to get through Army, and they haven't beaten Army ever before. And
yeah.
I think if BU didn't have Army, they would have won it.
Yeah, just to, with the Terriers, because I know there's a little bit talking about the at-large implications for them. A win against Duke would have helped them, but they needed to get past Army, I think.
Yeah.
Them losing to Army makes them a non-discussion, unfortunately. If they got past Army and lost to Loyola, but then beat Duke, they'd definitely be an at-large consideration, but they needed that that second Army win.
Absolutely. I think they would have gotten the edge over maybe a Rutgers.
Safe.
Oh, I thought you guys were continuing. I didn't interrupt.
No,
I thought, Loyola just comes back like a champion. We were literally like a couple weeks away from a season where three out of the four last year's Final Four didn't make the tournament. Now one's in, second one's pretty much probably locked up a home seed, and Brown is maybe the hottest team in the Ivy. Is that hot?
No, that's very lukewarm. I think Brown's definitely the hottest team right now in the Ivy.
Like, Princeton's just, I can't believe Yale lost to Harvard. Like, I cannot believe that. I mean, I know it's a rivalry game, and that's what happened with Navy and Army, but, you know, just the way Yale was playing, I thought Ben Reese was just, really pushing himself into the Player of the Year conversation, and I was shocked by that. So, now those three teams are out. A week ago, the week now, one's in, second one's pretty much a lock. The third one, probably odds on favorite to win the Ivy League tournament. So, yeah, life comes at you fast.
All right. So the events of the past week made the bracketology discussion that was oh so confusing in prior weeks a lot more simpler. As it stands right now, kind of easy to say Rutgers and UNC will be the last two in. But if we're talking chaos theory, there's always the possibility that Albany and Denver slip up. So, for the fun of this purpose, because it's not much fun saying, okay, yeah, Rutgers and UNC, who gets in if A, Denver loses, or B, Albany loses?
Denver or Albany? I think more of Denver over Albany because they have a Duke win and they have some pretty good wins. I don't know if you would take... That's a weird discussion. I don't know if you would take Denver out of it if they lose the Big East tournament. Albany might have a bigger case for them to be out because they don't have one win, and that's Yale. That's pretty much it, and that Yale win isn't that big. Denver's defeated Air Force. It kind of right now creeping up to be a top 20 RPI team, I believe. Top 20, they're, I think, 23rd in the RPI. Duke's a top 10. They did lose to North Carolina, but they did defeat Notre Dame. They did lose to Ohio State. They have Towson. So I think they have an all right resume, Denver does. Do they get a seed? Maybe not with the loss. If they do, it might be the 8 seed, but I think Denver's in. Albany, on the other hand, I think they have to win their tournament in order to get in?
I think Denver's fine, and they're probably still going to get a home game, even if they lose the first round. They could lose to Providence, and I think Denver is pretty locked in for a home game come the first weekend. If Albany loses, Albany's not going to be in the tournament. And because I think if it's between them and Rutgers, you can look at UNC's losses, and they are significant. Just as means in the quantity. But they now have wins over Denver, Notre Dame, Duke, and there's somebody else I'm missing, right? There's three top 10
Syracuse
wins.
Syracuse and Notre Dame.
They beat Syracuse too? Yeah, the first game, sorry. Obviously. I said Notre Dame. So, yeah, I knew I was missing it. So, they beat the ACC and they beat Denver. They crushed Virginia. Or not crushed Virginia, but, they beat Virginia. But, it's the 23rd. So those are four pretty big wins. Rutgers, has a better strength of schedule. I think it would, be closer discussion between them and Albany. But I just think given Albany's lone win, is Yale, and Yale losing last week is bad, because if Yale stuck with it and won the Ivy League, maybe they had a number 12 or number even 10 RPI, who knows, but them losing was unfortunate, especially considering what was is Harvard even the 35. So I think Albany's the least likely, I think, to lose, just because for some reason, I get a feeling Villanova is could stun Denver. They're playing really well. The only loss so far this stretch has been to Denver. So, if they can play like they did against Maryland, I know Maryland was playing off an extended break, but, Villanova could pose a challenge, and, something wacky tends to happen in at least one conference tournament. So,
Denver has generally done well, but sometimes they slip up in the Big East title game. I think, though, if they lose to Villanova, they'll definitely be a seeded team. Providence, still, I think, in this seeded thing. If they lose to Marquette in the semifinals, they might be in danger of losing the seed, but I think the Pios are in, I agree with you guys, the Pios are in no matter what.
The bad thing for Denver, right, you guys would agree, that North Carolina loss, because if their only loss this year would have been Ohio State, they're pushing for a one seed, because then they would have had a Duke win, they would have had a North Carolina win, and they had a Notre Dame win, and then they take care of business in the Big East. Now, exactly what you're saying, Ryan. If they slip up in the Big East final, you go from a top four seed to
back end 7-8.
Yeah, but back end, yeah, which isn't a bad place to be. Remember that article I did last year on chalk versus have nots, half of the last Final Four participants since 2010 have been lower seeds. I believe it's six, seventh, and unseeded teams have made 14 of the last 28 Final Four seats since 2010. So, if you're two or three seeds, actually been kind of bad luck since Syracuse crushed it in 08 and 09 as a 3-2 seed. There's only been 1-2 seed to even make the Final Four since 2010, and that was Duke in 2012. So,
well, crap. So I think just going off of that, Denver is at Albany. The issue is Albany passes the eye test, but they don't pass the analytics, and almost only counts on horseshoes and hand grenades. Current consensus number one seed's Maryland. The consensus number two seed as right now is Syracuse. Albany lost to them by a combined two goals. But Albany lost to them by a combined two goals. They lost. They get one of those two wins, they're breathing easy. And no matter what they do in the American East. Now they're sweating it a little bit. I think Albany still doesn't have too much of a problem in the American East. But they don't have that insurance policy anymore.
Yeah.
So I guess flip into that conversation, if let's say Denver is the team that loses, Albany wins, holds serve, who do we boot out between UNC and Rutgers if we have to put in, if we have to give Denver an at-large?
UNC is probably going to get it.
It's got to be Rutgers. Some way, Rutgers is going to get screwed again, because, one, they're not UNC because they're not the big name, I think, in my mind. And two, I don't think because Rutgers got in the Big Ten tournament, they're not in, and North Carolina won the ACC tournament. So they might give that faux at AQ to UNC.
UNC, according to Patrick Stevens, has the number one strength of schedule.
Yeah, that's the thing. UNC, they are one game above 500, but the issue is now they've got so many top 10 wins after the ACC tournament, plus the Denver wins. So that's going to be the big issue, is Rutgers deserves it more, but UNC has the better resume now. So that's, and I don't know if the NCAA is going to give Rutgers that benefit of missing after they miss their conference tournament. So I think if you're Rutgers, you're this weekend, you're sending a bouquet of flowers to Bill Tierney and becoming lifelong Denver Pioneer fans.
Indeed.
Move on to this week's slate of regular season games, a.k.a. the ACC Patriot League Challenge, because they're the only ones really doing this. Let me just get the calendar. We'll get into the conference tournament fun in a minute. But on Saturday, we have Army and Notre Dame, which could have helped Army a big lot if they... if UNC didn't win the ACC tournament and other factors. And in the Eastern Central New York Derby, it's Syracuse heading to Hamilton to play Colgate at noon. That one would have been way more fun in a hypothetical Peter Baum era, but otherwise, good to see that rivalry keep on. And then Sunday, Duke takes on BU. And once again, that would have been a big help for BU had they beaten Army and other things didn't happen. But so it goes, to quote Kurt Vonnegut. Those are those. Let's dive into the conference tournaments. We'll go one by one and make our picks for each one as we go along as well.
Are we going to make picks for the semifinals or just the overall champion? Okay, perfect.
We're doing the full shebang.
Bang.
All right, we'll start off with the SoCon. On Thursday at 5, Jacksonville plays Air Force. That's going to be 5 o'clock Mountain,
Eastern,
Eastern. It is Eastern? Okay.
Because they're playing at Richmond.
Okay, they're playing at Richmond. Okay. Jacksonville Air Force at 5, and then Furman Richmond at 7:30. You'd argue Richmond's the best team in the conference, but Air Force won the tiebreakers over Richmond, so the Falcons are your top seed in the SoCon. Richmond is the host, though, so where do we go from here? We're not picking the ACC Patriot League games, right?
Yeah, we're not, because I don't think they mean a lot.
No, they don't. So we'll just stick with the conference. So how do we see the SoCon shaking out?
I see Air Force and I see Richmond going ahead. And then I think in the SoCon, it's going to be a tough one because Air Force did beat Richmond in the regular season. And Air Force has been gotten a little bit better as of yet, but they do have some tough losses to Marquette and Furman. They beat Richmond by 2. I like Richmond to win in that rematch. They have their best goalie in Benny Pugh as well, Teddy Hatfield. Plenty of offensive firepower at attack and some at midfield, but they're an attack-heavy team. Benny Pugh is one of the best goalies in the nation with a 68% save percentage. I like Richmond in that one.
Yeah, I believe he's was their defensive player of the year in
SoCon. Yes.
So shout out to him. I'm going to go with Chris. I'm going to go with Richmond over Furman. Just because I'm an orange apologist, I'm going to go for Jacksonville over Air Force.
Oh, my God.
I think Jacksonville is a little hot right now. They're hot. They're starting to feel themselves. And maybe, you know, maybe they can make some magic happen. So
imagine if Jacksonville wins this tournament.
I'm going to go. That would be insane. That would be awesome. Because, like, they started out
this. Put Syracuse at that one seed and make sure Jacksonville wins that playing game so that we have John Galloway and Powell back in the dome.
Let's lay it out for people. I mean, Jacksonville started this season 0-9. You know, there were a couple of close losses. They lost to Lehigh by 1. They lost to Detroit Mercy by 1. They lost Air Force in overtime. You know, unlike other people, we don't believe there are more victories in lacrosse. So that's a loss is a loss. So starting 0-9 and then winning 3 of their last 4 and scoring more points in these last 3 wins than pretty much all but 2 of their losses. You know what I mean? Like they scored double digits in the Lehigh and Detroit Mercy loss. But other than that, their highest were a couple of games at 9 and most of them averaging around 6. Goals per game. Last 3 wins, 16, 13, and 17 goals have been scored. So they're starting to find the net, and maybe, you know, that's what I said. There is no rhyme or reason to any of the tournaments, whether it's the conference tournament or the big barbecue. You know, is this, are you hot? And do you just have fortunate seeding? And that's pretty much kind of all that really matters. And if you get the right matchups and you win, you know, you don't need to apologize for anything. So we saw last year with Hobart, stunning Presser's team. Sorry, Brian. And then winning it all against St. Joe's at St. Joe's. You know, so you, just because you're not supposed to win it and just because your team's not perfect doesn't mean you can't give a shot. So I'm going to go with the Dolphins to upset Air Force, but I still think Richmond's going to win it all.
I think this will be one of the conferences where the top seeds hold serve. I like Air Force and Richmond, and then I like Richmond from there. Up, oh, Caps tied it. Your boy Jake's going to be back to being hyped. We'll go to the NEC next.
Woo, 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 woo!
Chris will be there. Bringing back memories of my senior year when I made the trip over to Hobart to cover the ECAC final. That was Denver versus Ohio State, and that was a good one there at Hobart.
I got some weird looks today over people from like on the Cuse team at practice saying like, "Why are you going to the NEC?" I'm like, "Cause I'm writing for it for College Cross," and it's like, "Why are you going to do that?" And I'm like,
"I have nothing better to do this Thursday."
And I'm on the grind, like I want a job, and we love the NEC, and the NEC loves us back. So like, what's good?
We like hustlers. That's what we like around here, College Cross, and Chris is a hustler, for sure. So.
Alrighty, so we got Hobart's the host. They'll host Sacred Heart at 1 o'clock on Thursday. And then Robert Morris and Brian. Brian actually has the 2 seed after Hobart's win over Robert Morris. They'll face off at 4.
Hobart over Sacred Heart. Shout out to our boy in the huddle. Big Hobart fan. Hobart. As that one NEC graphic had said that one day. I think they've, you know, had a rocky season, right? Everyone would agree to that. Started pretty hot. Kind of just fell off a cliff, right? I mean, they lost 5 of the 7 games in the middle of the season. Now they're on their 4-game win streak and are looking pretty well. But yeah, I think Hobart's going to win against Sacred Heart. And I'm going to go with the upset here. I'm going to go Robert Morris over Bryant.
Bobby!
I don't know if there's an upset where you guys think Bryant isn't their typical, you know, dominant self. But I like this Robert Morris team. They get up and down. But I think Hobart's going to win it all, and they're going to repeat as the NEC champions and lock up that AQ.
So we take a look at that first matchup, Hobart-Sacred Heart. They met at Sacred Heart earlier in the year. Sacred Heart won in overtime 8-7. Not going to sing. But that was during that middle-of-the-road stretch where they had that, and then they lost to Syracuse. They're on that 4-game winning streak now. They beat Bryan by 7, and then they had a nice come-from-behind victory over Robert Morris on Saturday. I like Hobart being Sacred Heart in this one, plus the fact that it's home kind of helps the Statesmen. It's a heavy batch of juniors and freshmen that have plenty of experience. Hancock, Justin Scott, Chris Islandy, and Eric Holden, big, and Stanley Gilbertson, big contributors as freshmen. And so they'll be having a really strong team next year if they lose, especially the junior and going Jackson Brown. Going to the Bryant-Robert Morris game, Bryant defeated Robert Morris handedly 16-5 in Rhode Island. Bryan has played a lot more tougher opponents than Robert Morris has, in my honest opinion. They lost to Brown by 2. They They defeated Yale by 3, and they lost to BU by 3. I do like Brian over Robert Morris. Sorry, Bobby Moe, but they had a really good season. I like Bryant. And in the championship game, I like Hobart over Bryant again to repeat.
I'm going to go Hobart over Sacred Heart. I'm going to go Robert Morris over Bryant, though, in a revenge game. And you know what? I'm going to go with Robert Morris winning it.
That's what we like.
Yeah, Bobby Moe's been looking pretty good this year. And, you know,
They look nice.
Yeah, I keep on falling back to that game in February against Penn State where they gave them a scare. I think they have what it takes to get that revenge factor. You know, you got to think, okay, we got our butts handed to us by Bryant. So let's give it to them there. And then let's get revenge on Hobart for, you know, losing out last week. And it's really fresh in their mind. So give me the Colonials and the NEC. We will then move on to the America East. Where, again, this is the one that everyone on the bubble, meaning Rutgers and UNC, are going to be watching very carefully. Albany hosts Stony Brook at 7, and UMBC and Binghamton face off at 4:30. Where do we go from here on this one?
I'm going to take Binghamton over UMBC in a close one. I'm going to take Albany over Stony Brook. And I'm going to take Albany over Tom Moore in the AE championship game. I think Binghamton has Tom Moore, and that's pretty much it. Granted, they have a lot more players, but the majority of their offense is Tom Moore. I think Albany will take the cake here. But, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if Albany loses, like last year.
Yeah, I think that is fresh in their mind from last year and not the tournament. The way they wanted to get in. I don't see Albany failing to win against Stony Brook. I like Binghamton over UMBC. I think it's going to be a rematch of Binghamton versus Albany, and I think it'll be a little bit closer, hopefully, than the 10-4 game they had. But I think Albany wins this.
Yeah, I agree. Albany over Stony Brook. Binghamton over UMBC. Albany beats Binghamton. I think things kind of hold serve here with the Danes. So, exhale, bubble, if you will. We'll then move over to the Thunderdome Colonial, where everything is stupid and goes haywire. Towson hosts Drexel at 5. UMass plays Hofstra at 7:30. Here's where we're probably going to go all contrarian.
I like Towson over Drexel. I like Hofstra over UMass. And we're dealing with Hofstra in May here, so I like Towson over Hofstra.
I like Hofstra and Towson to make the championship game, but I think Towson wins it. I think if it was Drexel-Hofstra, that'd be a little interesting. I'm going to go with Towson and Hofstra for championship game with Towson winning.
I'm going Towson over Drexel. I'm going UMass over Hofstra because there isn't anything more Hofstra in late April or May than Hofstra losing a game that they should easily win. So give me UMass, and then give me Towson to win the Colonial. Next up, on our docket, the Big East. Denver will play Marquette, and Villanova will have a rematch against Providence. So both games rematches the last week, and again, another bid stealer coming out of the Big East. Who knows? Let's see.
So Marquette's the 4 seed. This is not Marquette from last year. I think Denver just works them. Nova over Providence pains me to say because we love Providence. Go Friars. Excellent year for them, though. My heart wants to say Nova over Denver, but I think Denver's going to take care of business against the Wildcats. So give me Denver.
I think this tournament's going to depend on how the adjustments from just Saturday can be. Denver beats Marquette. I don't think Marquette has a shot, especially this year's team. Villanova Providence could go either way. I think Providence can play better than they did against Villanova. They lost to the Cats 15-7 last week at Providence. So I'm going to assume that Providence is going to take a little bit of that, just because they were blown out for most of the game, to be quite honest. Providence, I think, can play a lot better than what they did against the Cats. I'm going to go with Providence in this one, and Denver beats Providence in the Big East.
I'm going to go Denver beats Marquette. I think Villanova keeps it up against Providence. They double up on what they did last week, so I like the Cats. And then because nothing ever goes according to plan this time of year, give me Villanova over Denver.
The Cats.
Bill Tierney does an amazing job at the Pios, but the one issue that the Pios have, and it's not really too big of an issue because the rest of their body of work takes care of it, is conference championship games. And it doesn't really hurt the Pios in the end because they generally show up in the NCAA tournament anyway, so that's not a big deal for the Pios. But I just think that Villanova, they're one of the hotter teams in the nation, give me them in the Big East. And then that leads us to the Big Ten tournament, which all four teams are in, but intrigue abounds. We got Maryland and Penn State. That's at 5, and then Ohio State's the host. They'll host Johns Hopkins at 7:30. So the Big Ten tournament, how do we see it?
Oh, this will be a fun one. Maryland's going to ride the hot hand over Penn State. Penn State does keep it close. I think now with Jerry Arcari not being the Jerry Arcari we once thought, they might go more Drake Grimes or Billy Lombardi against Henningsen. But Henningsen in the first matchup killed Arcari. I'm going to go with Maryland in the first game. Second game, kind of similar to last year, where the host is actually the lower seed, I believe. Ohio State's Ohio State's 2 seed. Never mind then. Anyway, so scratch what I just said. Ohio State's going to beat Johns Hopkins. And then the title game, I'm going to go with Ohio State again over Maryland. Matt locks Maryland off the one seed pedestal.
I'm going to go with Maryland over Penn State. I think they're just, you know, playing that Maryland ball. I put that stat out last week. Since March 5th of 2016, Maryland has lost 4 games by 4 points, with 3 of them coming in overtime. So they've just been on an amazing stretch. So I think that is going to continue against Nittany Lions. I'm so deflated after the Hopkins Maryland game last week. And the only saving grace was the Hopkins lost 6-5 once Brock Turner was taken out after the first quarter. Actually, I think it was like tied 5-5. Jared Logan played really well. He only gave up 5 goals the rest of the game. Dear Petro, I know you're going to be leaving to Michigan soon. So as a parting gift to me, let Cole Williams and Forey Smith eat. I want them on the field. Both of them are like 6'3", 6'5". I think Cole is 6'5". So just let the young pups eat. So hopefully we can beat the Ohio State. Just because I'm a homer, a horrible homer, I'm going to go Hopkins. They actually were leading that game against Ohio State 7-6 in the regular season. So Ohio State just had a big third quarter to seal that game. So I think they're going to learn from that. Give me Maryland for the championship over Hopkins.
Does Jerry Logan start in net?
Yes.
Give me Penn State over in an upset over Maryland.
Woo! Woo!
Again, that's not going to be a knock on Maryland. I just think.
I bet, yeah, you got to lose some games. Yeah, exactly.
Better to lose in your conference tournament that you're assured an NCAA bid anyway, and the worst you can do is a 2 seed. So
if there ever was going to be a letdown game, it would be after playing in front of 15,000 people.
Yeah.
And beating just curb stomping Hopkins.
So. Yeah, and Penn State knows it can turn it on when they want to. So I go with Penn State over Maryland. Give me Ohio State over Hopkins, and then give me Ohio State winning the Big Ten and converting them, convolting them to a 3 seed. when all is said and done there. We got two tournaments on Fridays because the MAAC, in all its infinite wisdom, decided, hey, let's be one of those conferences that plays on Selection Sunday so we could have a 10 a.m. ESPNU slot. We have Detroit Mercy. By the way, it is. We did talk about this last week. They did officially rebrand themselves to Detroit Mercy as the athletic program early during the off season. So Detroit Mercy versus Monmouth. They play at 4 on Friday, and then Marist and Canisius at 7. This tournament is hosted by Marist, but Marist is the 3 seed in that.
Give me Monmouth. And give me Marist, and I'm going to go with Monmouth over Marist.
I'm going to go Monmouth, Marist, Monmouth over Marist.
Monmouth, Marist, Monmouth, I'm like you guys.
Go Hawks.
All right, and then lastly, we have the Ivy League tournament, where actually this one's pretty wide open, so this one's actually probably the most interesting tournament, given that only one bid's going to come out of it. It's not like the Big Ten where, okay, yeah, it's a good set of teams, but all four are making the tournament. This one's do or die with some pretty good teams when they play up to their potential. It's in New Haven. 3:30, we got Brown at Brown and Princeton in what should be an offensive slobber knocker. And then Penn and Yale at 6. Penn, remember, beat UVA last week, so... Penn does come into the Ivy League tournament with some momentum. This one, again, there's only one bid up for grabs. It's do or die. And if they play, and they play up to their potential, this could be a real good tournament. Big if, but yeah.
Princeton repeats over Brown. Yeah, Penn upsets Yale. Yale's is in the tailspin. And Princeton over Penn. Tigers, as predicted by yours truly, we're going to have a bounce back year this year, are your 2017 Ivy League champions.
The host of the Ivy League tournament hasn't won the actual tournament going at least back to 2014. Could be even further than that.
Yeah, 2012. 2012 was won by Princeton, right?
I believe so.
Anyway,
it's been a long time since the host of the Ivy League tournament has won the actual Ivy League tournament. That being said, I like Princeton over Brown. I like Yale over Penn. And history stays, Princeton beats Yale. Michael Sowers and Austin Sims are going to be in the Carrier Dome Selection Sunday.
Oh, God. Not like this. Yeah, when Princeton's on, Princeton's the best team in the Ivy League by far. The issue is, this is Princeton late in the spring. I think Yale beats Penn. But I can't trust Princeton. Princeton would be my pick on paper. But kind of like, to put a soccer analogy, Princeton is like Tottenham. Except that this time Tottenham actually finished ahead of Arsenal. Where they find a way, trust me, as a Tottenham fan and Princeton's one of my side teams, I know what this is. It's, you're expecting them to finally make the next step and then they find a way to bungle this up. Princeton's going to find a way to bungle this up. Brown's hot. Brown's finding their offense again. I like Brown over Princeton. And then Yale versus Brown, I'm going to go with Yale. Yale generally does a good job of doing their job in the Ivy League tournament. I know what Chris was saying with history about the top seeds not doing that great in the Ivy League tournament, and I know Yale's been on a cold spell, but generally the Bulldogs do their job in the Ivy League tournament. So give me Yale to come out of the Ivy League alive.
I think that's it, right?
Yeah, that's those are your conference tournaments.
Saturday and Friday. Sunday.
Should we tease the live episode?
Yes, we should. On Sunday at 8:30-ish, We're going to be live on Facebook Live. We'll also have the recorded podcast coming up after it. But join us on Facebook Live. We'll be doing, if you liked last year, we did the live show over Skype and YouTube. This year we're going to do Facebook Live because it's just as easy, and we've been doing a lot of live stuff on Facebook Live with Chris's work. So it's going to be us three. We're also planning on having Jake and Adam join on board. So
join us. Heavy hitters.
Yes. So 8:30-ish, we'll tweet out the exact time. Join us on Facebook, and we'll do that. Also, if you haven't already, I've been doing some exclusive content from Instagram for all those brackets. So check out our Instagram page, college_cross. And that, I bet we wrap things up.
That should wrap things up, yeah.
Alrighty, so...
We'll tease a little bit of more stuff. We'll have some nice little content heading your way, obviously, with tomorrow with me at the NECs.
And so
we'll
69 probably have articles and podcasts?
Not that nice, but we'll have some special content going along for championship week and next week. So stay tuned because I'm off of exams on Tuesday with my final paper. But other than that...
Chris is out on bail now, folks.
But it'll just be a teaser to expect for championship weekend with me, Marissa, and Joe down at Foxborough.
And also, I guess just as a little quick advertisement thing, I will be at the quarterfinals in Hofstra. I've got my parking pass. Come say hello to me tailgating. I will have more details as that comes in as we go along. Otherwise, standard stuff. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play, whether you're Team Android or Team Apple. We've got you covered. Subscribe to College Crosscast there. You can also subscribe to us on Podomatic.
Leave us a review, right?
Yes, we need reviews. Yes. Please leave reviews.
Give us Safe reviews, as a new give us five
mic.
Stars.
Yeah, Safe has a new mic. Automatic 5 stars.
Bang.
Additionally, follow us on Twitter. At Ryan McKee29 is mine.
You can follow me at CF Jastrzemski.
And I am at @ERI_Barrister.
And at Sexy Time Lax is the primary one. Follow that for all the links to all the articles, all the banter, all the fun stuff. CollegeCross.com.
Follow us on Facebook too, because that's where we have a lot of our stuff now too.
Yeah.
Facebook, Instagram.
Instagram, as I said earlier, college_cross. Exclusive content there. And as always, read the articles, comment, join in the conversation. Otherwise, we look forward to Conference Championship Week, and we'll see you Sunday night for our Selection Sunday live show, all synced up to ESPNU and all the tricks.
Indeed. Good to be back with you, boys.
It's fantastic.
Back in the saddle.
Agreed.
Best friends that anyone could have.
And on that note, stay hydrated.
Bye, Felicia.